Welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Mountain towns like Park City offer year-round sporting opportunities for people of all ages, sizes, and fitness levels. And as home to the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Training Center, and as a former and future host of the Olympic Games, celebrating our developing and elite athletes and appreciating intense competition is a big part of our mountain culture. But what if one's Olympic dreams, or even just a kid's ability to play in a summer soccer league or be part of their high school swim team, was thwarted by one's body, chromosomes, genes, or identity? Our next guest, Anna Baith, is a critical feminist scholar, cultural studies practitioner of sport, and the director of research at Athlete Ally. She's co-written a new book entitled Fair Game, Trans Athletes and the Future of Sports, that offers an insightful, timely examination of the ongoing battle within the world of athletics to determine, regulate, and legislate the role of trans athletes in sports. Whether you're an athlete yourself, have someone in your life who's part of the LGBTQIA+ community, or you're just a keen observer of culture and athletics, Fair Game is sure to provoke new thoughts and stoke lively discussion. Dr. Anna Baith, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
You're so welcome. Well, let's just start with the idea that, as you report in your book, trans athletes make up an incredibly small percentage of active competitive athletes, incredibly small. Yet there is so much discussion and legislation and concern about their participation. I know it's a multifaceted issue, but why do you think there is so much attention on this particular issue, especially by people who have no real skin in the game?
That is the question.
And I have to say,
you know, and that is the question that I've really been contemplating for the past 5 years, right? So I got into this work because I did my PhD really focused on gender and sport. And as I was finishing my doctorate, I was looking for a job. I was hired by an LGBTQ rights organization. And I have to say, I sort of went into the field a little blind. I didn't know a lot about trans athletes. And all of a sudden, I was getting asked all of these questions. And so I started by doing a lot of research. And to your point, the first thing I noticed was, wow, we're doing a lot of talking about trans athletes without talking to trans athletes. And of course, that is in part because there just aren't very many trans athletes, right? I mean, we are talking about less than 1% of the athletic community overall. But really, when we look at the numbers in elite sport, I mean, the number is so minuscule. I don't even want to read all the zeros. And in youth sport, it's less than about a quarter of 1%. So yeah, why then are we putting forward 13 times the number of bills banning trans folks from sport than there are out trans athletes?
Could you repeat that though? 13 times as many bills legislated than there are even trans athletes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, right. Do we need 13 bills per athlete? I don't think so. So when you look at the numbers, for me, all of this leads to a pretty clear picture, which is the creation of a moral panic, right? The idea that there is something going on and we need to do something about it, even though there's not really anything going on when it comes to trans athletes. Now, why that's happening, we could speculate. I think primarily it's because certain people want to get elected. They want to earn political positioning, or they want to be seen as experts who can cultivate policies, protections for certain people, even though the reality is those people, and in this case, I'm talking specifically about cisgender women in sport, don't need protection when we look at the history and we look at the statistics, at least not from trans athletes.
True. You bring up a great point in what you were just talking about, that there's a lot of discussion about trans athletes, but not much talking to trans athletes, which is frequently the case with marginalized communities all over the place. How did you find the athletes that you were able to talk with and share their first person accounts in your book? They're really terrific stories, and they run a gamut. They're not all doom and gloom stories. There's some great, inspiring, wonderful, heartwarming stories as well. But I loved how it humanized the experience of a trans athlete for people who may not be in either of those worlds. They may not be in competitive sport, they may not have an LGBTQ person in their lives, but how did you find the people, and how did the story gathering process work?
Yeah, well, so that was the impetus for the book, right? Again, we were hearing so much about trans athletes, and I was really lucky because, as I noted, I work for an LGBTQ rights organization, and so I ended up having access to a lot of athletes and a lot of trans athletes. The idea for the book was really, let's introduce the trans athlete experience to the world. And of course, the book has the role of the book, I think, has shifted a bit in the last few years with so many policy changes. But how we did it was pretty simple. We put out a call and we said, hey, we want to hear your stories. If you identify as trans, you identify as an athlete, we want to hear from you. And what's interesting is I told my co-author, if we hear from, five athletes, I'll be happy. Of course, we hear from 60 athletes within the first week.
Wow.
And we said, oh my gosh, okay, well, we need to tell these stories. And I think what that indicates first is trans folks want to tell their story. So it's even more shocking and startling to me that we weren't hearing those stories from other outlets. I think when we don't hear certain voices, the assumption is that those voices don't want to be heard. And that was not the case with the book. But the other funny part with this is we put out this call. And we put out a call only for adult athletes. Within the first maybe 5 hours, I had heard from three different families who said, I know that you're looking for trans adults, but I have a trans kid and they really want to talk to you and tell you about their sporting experience. We couldn't say no. So we brought in a really, the person who wrote the foreword to our book is Chris Mosier. Chris is, oh God, he's fabulous. And as soon as we could tell these kids, we think we'd really like Chris Mosier to interview you. Oh my God. It was like their dreams were coming true, right? He's this like amazing trans athlete and he's like the nicest guy in the world. So we expanded the storytelling to include trans kids, trans adults, and we tried to really span the gamut. And I'm so thankful for the athletes who were willing to tell their stories. I do think that the stories in the book paint a pretty clear but diverse picture. I mean, trans athletes are just like cis athletes. Everybody has their own experience.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Anna Baith, author of a new book called Fair Game: Trans Athletes and the Future of Sports. And just to define some terms in case you're not familiar, listeners, CIS denotes people who are of traditional gender identities of male and female only, whereas transgender is a person who was assigned a certain sex at birth and has come to realize that they are actually of the other gender or somewhere on the spectrum of those genders. Is that correct or close?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
It's whether you basically identify with what was assigned to you or if you don't.
Okay, great. There are so many topics to cover. We're just going to scratch at the surface in a short interview like this. But is the idea that there is a massive amount of natural differentiation in people's bodies and abilities and skills. And you bring up a great example of Michael Phelps, who has come out on the side of a more conservative view of gender for sports. Now, Michael Phelps has some pretty odd physical features, which help him dramatically to win whatever, 28 medals. Let's talk about him and how he is kind of an interesting example for the argument against or for trans athletes.
Yeah, so the argument I most often hear is, okay, well, it's not that I disagree with trans folks in general. But the idea that a man, a cisgender man, might wake up one day and say, actually, I identify as a woman, and then immediately start competing, that man would have all sorts of physiological advantages against over the women he would be competing against. Okay, so there are a lot of problems with that story. Or I think that story is just a little misinformed. First of all, that's just not how sport works. And also, that's not really how gender identity works. But the idea behind it, the idea that, okay, all men have advantages, physiological advantages over all women. They're all bigger, taller, stronger, faster. That's not really true. The other part of it, though, is to then say, okay, well, how do we manage that? We're going to regulate certain bodies who have certain abilities or who have, certain advantages, quote unquote. This is happening a lot with trans folks. We're saying, okay, well, in order for trans athletes to be able to participate, we're going to mitigate the amount of testosterone that they have in their body. And of course, this extends over to women athletes as well. Now, the irony for me there is, okay, so we want to control certain parts of certain athletes' bodies because we're afraid, worried about fairness, but we don't control other parts of other athletes' bodies when clearly there is a quote unquote unfair advantage. And Michael Phelps is a great example of this because he has all sorts of genetic advantages, right? I mean, he has inordinately long wingspan. I read a great interview about one of his competitors who said, he said basically Michael Phelps is designed for swimming. His body was genetically designed, it feels like, for swimming. He also he doesn't process lactic acid in the same way as other athletes, so he doesn't get as sore or tired as quickly. And yet, when we look at the story of Michael Phelps, he is beloved. He is celebrated for his athletic prowess. His genetic advantages are seen as great assets in sport, and he is upheld as an icon in US sports culture. And at the same time, we're vilifying other folks, and in particular, trans athletes, for alleged advantages that, honestly, I've read a lot of the science, they don't have. So again, this really raises some questions for me about just who gets to compete and who gets to be celebrated in sport and who doesn't and why.
Yeah, sometimes I think the well-meaning suggestion for special leagues for trans athletes or people with genetic or chromosomal, some people call them abnormalities, which in my mind takes me back to the historically not great situation of separate but equal. So I'm forced to wonder, should we, in fact, if we're going to do that, should we be having leagues for people who are over 6 feet tall or under 5 feet tall or over a certain BMI? Or like there's so many ways we could divide our physical selves and categorize us. So I don't know. I guess I just want to wonder what are your thoughts for what is the ideal way to even, do we even need to know? Are we going to get to a point where in the same way they test for doping, that we need to test for chromosomes or test for genetics to see if somebody might be intersex. And that's why, in fact, that their muscle mass is different from the person on the stand next to them.
that is the question, right? That's the idea. And I think I don't have an answer. And I don't know that anybody really does on how we do this and do it in a way that is fair or I guess just not unfair. But the point that we draw in the book is exactly what you just did. Can't we at least get a little bit more creative? Let's get more imaginative about what sport is and how we do it. I mean, for me, the bottom line is I believe that everybody should have access to their bodies. And in this country right now, especially for kids, one of the only ways to access their bodies, because Let's be honest, we have a wavering physical education system at this point. The only way for them to access their bodies is through sport. And I see sport evolving into this pay-to-play model where only certain kids and certain families who can afford to have their kids in sport get to actually explore what their bodies are able to do and get to learn how to be confident in their bodies. And so for me, this is it's a broader call to say, hey, can't we do this differently? Can't we set up a system where everybody gets access to their body? That's the bottom line. And I don't know that I have particular opinions on how we do that, except to say, let's get creative and let's start taking our resources and our energies and taking them away from a focus on, say, trans athletes to focusing on creating healthier sports systems for everyone.
Yeah. And I wonder too about what's the point of especially very young children in sports? Are we that obsessed with winning that the possibility that someone has an edge is so terrifying? Or is it in fact about participation and teamwork and learning to work together and learning to take turns and all these life skills, right? Like what is the overarching directive that is leading us to want our kids in sports? It seems like it's bigger than just winning to me, or it should be.
I think it should be too. And maybe, that's my opinion. But I do think it should be more than that. And I think if nothing else, it should be a safe and cared for space for young people. Sport has the capacity to do good. It also has the capacity to harm. And when I look at sport overall, it's not just a question about who gets excluded. It's also in the sporting system as it currently operates, who is getting to access that system in a way that is safe? When I look at the numbers of, not to go too deep and too dark, but you look at abuse in sport, sexual assault, trauma. How kids are emotionally and physically manipulated in sport. I mean, again, this really raises some questions for me about what are we doing with sport? And are we living up to the values that we're purporting to uphold in sport? Because I think if we were, sport would look and feel very different, not just for trans athletes, but for all athletes.
Yeah. One of the things that you bring up in the book that I love, there's a lot of great science and background, is the fallacy that testosterone is the key to gauging how athletically successful somebody might be. Could you talk a little bit about
Yeah. So I've read every study on testosterone.
that?
And I will say that they're not very comprehensive. I'll just leave it at that. But what we do know from the science and what we do know from research is the variables that do impact athletic performance are pretty clear. It's access. It's coming from a background where you can afford to have great coaching at a young age and to have access to facilities. Now, that is quite different than, say, testosterone. And maybe I'll just point out one other note about this overemphasis on testosterone. I always find it curious when we make blanket statements about something that's pretty minuscule. So to say we're going to ban all trans athletes because of one variable testosterone doesn't really make sense to me. Also because testosterone, the amount of testosterone in men's bodies and women's bodies overlaps pretty significantly. So again, to say, okay, well, testosterone is the marker of something, well, it's not, first of all. But also then to say, okay, well, we're going to control testosterone levels. I always find that curious because testosterone is just one factor. If we're going to talk about testosterone, why are we not also talking about testosterone receptors? in those same bodies. We only want to talk about the amount of testosterone. We don't want to talk about the impacts of that testosterone, right? I mean, this again just really raises some questions for me about like, okay, what are we trying to control here by looking at one variable? And to say, I'm going to ban an entire group of people based on one minute factor, that just doesn't quite sit right for me. Now, that said, again, I mean, when we look at what actually impacts athletic ability and we look at the variables, it's pretty clear. It's a lot of who gets access. And again, this really brings me back to the point of, okay, if we want to create a fair sporting system, shouldn't we start by making sport free and available to all people? Wouldn't that be the ultimate modification to make sport fair?
We experience that very much in towns like Park City, where skiing is a very expensive sport. A lot of the young people here are very athletic and they're on traveling teams for hockey, traveling teams for soccer, whatever it is. And then there tends to be a lot of driven people. So they see this as a sign of their upcoming success, you know, the fact that they can have these experiences. But you're right, it is absolutely closed off to many folks for a lot of reasons, for time, for money, beyond what their bodies may be composed of. So I think that's an excellent point. It's not just about this, it's about marginalized people of all kinds having access to sports at the same level as everyone else.
And I think it's about the people who do have access. Because, you know, I don't know. For me, I was raised playing sport, and my parents' motto was, you're not going to get along with everybody, and this is a great opportunity to learn how you manage that. Right? You're going to meet people who are not like you, who do not come from the same background as you. And this is a great opportunity for you to figure out how you approach those situations. And I really wonder if we are not allowing certain people into sport, either through restrictive bans or through creating barriers to access, what does that also mean for the kids who are in sport? Are they getting those opportunities to meet people who aren't from the same background as them? Especially in a moment where I feel like there's extreme polarization. Can't sport be that place for us to meet people who are not like us, who don't think like us, and have a conversation and learn how to be a team?
Yeah. I was a rower in college and I spent a year in England and I rowed there and it was so much fun. But at the time, much probably like now, Americans weren't the most popular in England. And so it wasn't until I got to know the other women on the crew team that I had friends, because it cut through all that sometimes comes between you or these biases that we have. And those ended up being my very best friends because they got to know me as a person, not me as this, you know, representative of Americans. And I think the same thing is probably very true for trans athletes who are allowed to be in mainstream sports, is that people know them as a human, not as a representative.
Exactly. And I think part of that for me is the fact that in sport, you're going to see the very best and the very worst in other people. And people are going to see that in you, at least in my case, right? And so what a gift that is to give to not just young people, to any person, to say you get to be your best and worst version in a space. And other people are going to be with you there.
It's a safe space, ideally.
It's a safe space. It's a safe space, right? And I want that. I want that for everybody.
I want that as well. There are so many nuances and background materials that are so important about this issue that if you are interested, please check out Dr. Baeth's new book, Fair Game: Trans Athletes and the Future of Sports. Doctor, can you also direct us towards any online sources where people might be able to keep up with what's going on legislatively, culturally, in transports world?
Yes. If you're interested in this topic in particular, I would say follow Chris Mosier online. He has an Instagram, which is fabulous, and he's always updating people on that news. Of course, you can follow me and my co-author, Ellie Rocher. We both have websites, which are ournames.com. A lot of what I put out is not just about this topic, but just about sport in general. And of course, if interested, take a look at the book. And even if you don't read the book, hopefully it is a gift that you can give to somebody else.
Well, Dr. Bates, this has been a really interesting discussion. The book, again, is Fair Game: Trans Athletes in the Future of Sports. Dr. Anna Bathe, thank you so much for being on the Mountain Life this morning.
Thank you.